Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to Show Me the Science, my weekly podcast. Now, this week, a request. And as I've mentioned, I do get requests, and I've got a few actually lined up, I must say. Anybody listening who's waiting, I will get to your requests, I promise. But this one is for Liam Dorsey, and Liam has asked me to cover the science of phage. Now, Liam, this is a great topic to recommend, and in fact, it was kind of in my mind before, I must say, because there's been recent stuff on this area, very exciting developments and all kinds of things happening. And it's a part of kind of microbiology is the field we're in here that kind of got forgotten, and now it's coming back with a vengeance because it gives us the prospect of designing brand new ways to kill bacteria. Now, what is phage? Well, to give it its full name, it's bacteriophage. And that gives us a clue what it does. Bacteriophages are viruses, first and foremost. And guess what they infect? They infect bacteria. And they kill bacteria. And that's what makes them really interesting. Now, all life on Earth is attacked by viruses. At least all life on Earth we've examined anyway, including us humans, of course. And I won't dare mention SARS-CoV-2, but many viruses infect humans. Everything gets infected by viruses. They're malignant little things that get inside our cells and replicate and spread. And these are viruses that actually infect bacteria themselves. And that's unusual, I suppose, because bacteria mainly live on their own. They aren't in a big sort of multi-celled organism like us humans. And yet here is a thing that can infect them, and it goes inside, replicates, and then comes out again, and the bacteria is killed. Now, you can see immediately how that might be a useful thing. Could we humans deploy phages to kill bacteria? Wouldn't that be a great idea? And that's what's been happening, and I'm going to give you an update on that. It was really popular as an idea back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, that period, and then it gets forgotten about. Various reasons which I'll come on to, but now it's back, as I'll explain. Now, first of all, when were they discovered? Well, they were first described by a British bacteriologist. Now, we must give the British scientists credit. A lot of early microbiology was done in the UK and in England in particular, and this is part of that tradition. A guy called Frederick Twort, strange surname, in 1915 gives us the first report of bacteriophages. Now, at that time, there were no electron microscopes, so he couldn't see this thing. All he knew was there was something very, very small that could infect bacteria, and he speculates on what it might be at the time, but couldn't actually see it. It wasn't until 1940 that the electron microscope was deployed to see these things. And of course, you need to have a lot of evidence then if you can't actually see something. But the evidence of this very, very small thing that could infect bacteria had been seen by Twort and then was developed further through the 20s and 30s. And then when eventually they saw them, their minds were blown because these are very tiny things. They're 20 nanometers across. The different sizes, the maximum is 200, but there are ones around 20 nanometers. Now remember, a nanometer is a billionth of a meter. So these are really, really, really tiny, much smaller than bacteria, because they're going to infect bacteria, so they've got to be smaller than the bacteria. So they're very, very tiny things. And we now know, and get this, this is a mind-blowing fact I came across, they are the most abundant biological entity on Earth. Now what do I mean by that? They are everywhere. If you take a sample of seawater and look for bacteriophages, you will find billions and billions of them in the seawater. If you swab down your desk, if you're sitting at a desk listening to me, or you're on your couch, swab a cushion, you will find loads of bacteriophages on that cushion. And imagine, I read, if you got rid of all the structures on the earth and left behind the phages, all the shape of everything could be seen. So the table I'm sitting beside here, the microphone, is covered in bacteriophages. They're an amazingly abundant form of life on Earth. Now, they can't live very long outside bacteria. So it's mainly they're living inside bacteria when you see them, actually, which means bacteria are everywhere, of course. But you do see some free-living ones as well. And one calculation is there are 10 to the 31 of them globally. Now, 10 to the 31 is a huge mega number. It's a 1 with 31 zeros after it. So if you total up all the entity that is phage in the world, you get to a huge, huge amount of biomass, basically. Now, what this means is if an alien, and I often use this as an analogy, if an alien came to Earth and wondered which life form has the most abundant nucleic acids that are part of the nucleic acids of the DNA, it turns out bacteriophages are carrying most of the nucleic acids on Earth. as an organism. So they're everywhere, right? And the reason why they're everywhere is because they infect bacteria, which are everywhere. And then the other thing that's really fantastic is I advise you to look at them on YouTube. Great movies about these, actually, or indeed even Google Image, you'll see them. They look really weird. And when they first saw them with the electron microscope, they were amazed by what they look like. They've got a very strange structure. They've got a head on them, big head. They've got a thing called a capsid, and that contains the nucleic acids. Now, some of them have DNA, and some have RNA as nucleic acids, and then they have a tail. And then they've got these tail fibers. Now, it's hard to describe, obviously, but have a look at the picture. These look like an alien spacecraft. And they land on the bacteria, stretch out their legs, and then they squirt their DNA or RNA into the bacteria. And now the nucleic acid is inside the bacteria. That codes for the coat and the head and the tail. And they reassemble, and then they get released from the bacteria. And they literally look like the spaceships landing on bacteria. And even more compellingly, structurally as well, the head, and it looks like a bit like a head, I suppose, has got 20 sides. It's icosahedral. So it looks like it's like a man-made thing almost, you know, this icosahedral structure. All these plates linking together to form this 20 subunit structure makes up the head. So in terms of biology, they're really weird looking things, and they work in a very quite a simple way in the end. So I'll give it to you again. They land on the bacteria with their legs, hold on tight. The capsid then opens, and the DNA and RNA is squirted inside the bacteria. It uses the bacterial machinery to copy those nucleic acids, and they code for the proteins that make up the bacteriophage, and you reconstruct the thing and it gets released. So again, like all viruses, they need the host cell machinery to replicate, and that means they aren't really a form of life. I mean, some people think viruses can't be classified as life because they need to go inside cells and replicate. They can't live freely, and bacteriophages are a bit like that. Now, the important fact here is they kill the bacteria in this process. And when that was observed in the 40s and 50s, of course, people wondered, could this be a way to kill bacteria? Now, by then, of course, we had antibiotics. And famously, Alexander Fleming gets the credit for the first discovery of penicillin. They get developed in the late 30s, especially with World War II coming. As is often the case, wars bring on innovation in health, and antibiotics were really developed in World War II. The reason being that most soldiers before antibiotics didn't die of injuries, they died of infections. So antibiotics first get deployed actually in World War II. And then, of course, they take off as a fantastic medicine. We list antibiotics as the second most important class of medicines after vaccines because they save so many lives. I mean, without antibiotics, we would all be in bits. And the carnage that was happening in the 1920s and 30s, say, from things like diphtheria, that went away because of antibiotics. So they came along, and that meant interest in phages began to wane a bit, except in one place, the Soviet Union. Famously, they kept working on phages. And by that stage, now we're in the 1950s, 60s now, they had phages that could kill listeria. Remember that one? That was in the news recently. They had ones that could kill salmonella, very powerful way to kill salmonella, another nasty infection in food. What was really nice was they also recognised that these phages could penetrate what are called biofilms. Now, very often during infections, the bacteria gets into your body and forms this thing called a biofilm. It's a jelly-like substance that the bacteria live inside, and it protects them from the immune system. And it's very hard to get through biofilms sometimes. And yet phages can do that. And I'm going to give you two examples later where they can be very useful in situations where there are biofilms. And the other thing is antibiotics have trouble getting into biofilms as well. So of course people realise this is a way to kill bacteria inside biofilms. Now, one thing that also put people off a bit, apart from antibiotics being easier to make, actually that was one reason, penicillin can be easily made in the lab. These bacteriophages, they're a bit tricky to make. You've got to grow them and purify them, you know. There's a way around that, which I'll come back to, but still that was another reason, a barrier to entry, we might call it. The second thing is the human immune response can kick off against them. So if you inject them into a human, the immune system, as it does with most things that are alien, begins to form an immune response to them, and sometimes you see an overactive immune response. So that kind of put people off slightly as well. That turns out to be not a major thing. We're not especially immune to them for various reasons, but certainly that was a factor, that if you stick them into somebody, you might get a nasty immune reaction to them, and that might make things worse, basically. But still, in spite of all that, the Russians keep going with this. And there was a place called the Eliava Institute of Bacteriophages, and they were mass producing phages, and they were studying them in all kinds of ways. And what they were able to show very nicely was the ones they made could kill typhoid, a very nasty germ. They could kill dysentery. Now remember, these were major killers of humans before antibiotics, and they could develop them and use them as a possible approach to treating those diseases. The Russians had trouble getting antibiotics for various reasons. There was a restriction on them, and for some reason they were behind the curve slightly on antibiotics. So instead they went after bacteriophages, and they really did a load of work on them. And they published some of this in the Western literature. You will see papers published by Russian scientists. A fair bit of information was kept unpublished, presumably for political reasons, I suppose. But still, the whole body of work on these bacteriophages was done in Russia. It had been done in France as well. I guess they had the French credit in the Pasteur Institute, a famous place for infectious disease research. They were doing lots of work as well. But the Russians certainly led the way. Now, next part of the history is the Soviet Union collapses. And guess what? They start working on them. Obviously, science began to get threatened a bit there, and the interest in them began to wane, even within the Soviet Union, and that meant there was less progress on them. But very importantly, they are back. And in the past, I suppose, 10 years or so, other scientists around the world have begun studying them again, and now we've lots more information on them, and I'm going to give you two big examples where they may be extremely useful. One is Staph aureus. Now, you may have heard of MRSA, that is methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. That's bacteria resistant to antibiotics, and they can be very damaging. It can cause very severe skin diseases. They can be lethal. There's a bacteriophage for antibiotic-resistant Staph aureus. A second is Pseudomonas. Now, Pseudomonas is in cystic fibrosis, infects the lungs. In fact, Pseudomonas can form this biofilm. And people with cystic fibrosis, they often die, actually, of bacteria in their lungs, more than the lung itself not functioning, because this Pseudomonas is very hard to clear with antibiotics. Some do work a bit, but still it can be a challenge. Again, they've got a bacteriophage to kill the bacteria that cause much of the symptomology and disease progression in cystic fibrosis, because this stuff can penetrate the biofilm that Pseudomonas has formed. Now, there's a big thing. If we could limit infection in cystic fibrosis, that would really help patients. So again, they're being developed to treat patients with cystic fibrosis. A third example, and there's loads of them, which is exciting, urinary tract infections, UTIs, they can be very nasty, especially in women where the urinary tract gets badly infected and people get all kinds of symptoms and it can turn into sepsis, which can be lethal. They've got a phage to kill the bacteria. It's a type of E. coli, a very common one, for UTIs, which is great. Another one I liked as well is if you have a joint replacement, a hip or knee replacement, that can get badly infected. The reason is, of course, you've stuck a joint in, made of metal, you've got all kinds of trauma in the tissues, and bacteria can get a foothold in that new joint. That can be very painful and mean the joint has to be replaced. It can also turn into sepsis, which is the severe type of infection, and the bacteria can coat the joint and form the biofilm. And it can be very hard to treat. Again, they've got a phage that can go in there and kill the bacteria that's causing all the problems in a prosthetic joint infection. And that tells us something very important, which I think is really great. Each phage is specific for the bacteria it infects. A bit like us, having certain viruses infect us more than other animals. Or let's say influenza and birds, you know. Viruses can have species specificity. This is true with phages as well. There's a specific one for, say, Pseudomonas. Another one will kill E. coli. And that's extremely useful because you've no off-target effects. You're not targeting bacteria that are good in your body, you know. So that specificity, we think, is extremely useful as well. And there are trials running at the moment on prosthetic joint infections, on cystic fibrosis and UTIs with these phage approaches. And it's very exciting. Now, the last bit is, guess what they're doing? They're combining them with antibiotics. Double punch, which is great, right? And as we see more and more antibiotic resistance emerging, which is a big worry, as I've discussed before, if bacteria dodge antibiotics, we're going to need something. And it could well be bacteriophages might rescue us in that situation. So that's a really important aspect of this. But they are combining them with antibiotics, which is great. And guess what? They're using RNA technology. So now you can make them in a lab, in a quite straightforward way, just like we did with the COVID vaccine. You can construct a phage, design the RNA to go inside, and now that can kill the bacteria when it infects it. And that means they're much more feasible to make. So the previous problems with making them versus the more simple way of making antibiotics, that's been resolved now in a way, because you can use the technology that came from COVID can now be deployed to make bacteriophages. And there is an example of the COVID dividend, you might call that. We now are predicting, and this, of course, is still a work in progress, so we've got to be slightly careful, we will make phages on demand. Those phages will be designed to kill a specific bacteria that's causing sepsis or causing a major illness in the body. And it might be in your lungs, it might be in your joints, whatever it is, this could well be the future, a very important part of the future of treating infectious diseases. So there you have it, Liam. Great topic, the science of phage. God bless the Russians. They did lots of work on this, and we're using some of their knowledge now as well, of course. That continues on, and maybe this will become the main way we treat infections in the future, could be through these wondrous things called bacteriophages. Thank you very much for listening as ever, and my podcast is a News Talk production, available every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.